you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm your host, Jordan Harbour. What you're about to hear is a serial story that's being stitched together. It's a story that was crowdsourced by our listeners. They came up with the ideas, voted for their favorite, and then, as the story progressed, they told me what we should do next. A bit like how you'd pick your own path in a role-playing game, or a choose-your-own-adventure. It was a lot of fun creating this story, and it's now here, stitched together so you can finally listen to the whole thing in one sitting. If this is your first time with us, The Twilight Histories is a little different from other shows in that you are the main character. In each show, you will explore a different world in the multiverse, some familiar, others totally exotic. All stories are dramatically told with the help of music and sound effects to make the experience come to life for you. And with that said, let's get on to today's show, The Paris Event. Enjoy. In 1908, an asteroid slammed into the remote Siberian wilderness. The massive explosion flattened 80 million trees. Huge earthquakes rippled out from the epicenter, and shockwaves broke windows hundreds of kilometers away. As these shockwaves spread across the globe, they were felt in Denmark, London, and Washington, D.C. The fires caused by the impact were so great that the skies in Scotland and Sweden glowed eerily at night. This was the Tunguska event. The explosion was measured in megatons. It caused a mushroom cloud that broke the stratosphere, an iconic image not repeated until the Cold War, many years into the future. But the Tunguska event happened during an age when the secret of flight had only just been unlocked, and the most deadly weapon was the Maxim gun. The point of departure in this world was millions of years in the past, and deep in interplanetary space, one of Jupiter's gravitational waves nudged the asteroid ever so slightly off course. This slight alteration would result in the disaster being named in this world, the Paris Event. Please put on your costume now while I finish your orientation. You will materialize in this world at the lip of the crater the day after the event. The ground will still be hot to the touch. The dust particles will dim the summer sun. Have a look at the blast zone if you want, and then I'd advise you to quickly move on. As you walk away from the crater, the devastation will evolve from evaporated remains of a once flourishing civilization to its shattered and scorched artifacts, and finally, to its broken structures, where battered survivors scrape the earth for their loved ones. The devastation is vast, with over 2,000 square kilometers within the kill zone, and even towns and cities hundreds of kilometers away will show signs of damage. The world is slowly waking up to this disaster. Thousands of volunteers will flood in, nurses, doctors, people with shovels and baskets of food. The world will cry for Paris. A Europe at once aflame with nationalism, arms races, and suspicion will discover a common language of heartache and compassion. This world has never experienced such shock, and yet this very grief will unite the world. Let's have a look at you. Very nice. I've always liked the Edwardian style. Active, individualistic, a little more gender fluid and sporty than the suffocating Victorian getup. You look like you could have stepped right out of some antique sports car, although certainly such things were novelties at this time. But don't feel too proud. I'm sure your outfit will quickly become drenched in mud and blood in this world. Please, step on the platform, and we'll get you on your way. You may feel dizzy, and you might not remember where you are at first. Don't worry, this will pass. A parting word. You have requested a very sad world, and we've put you in the very heart of that sadness. You will see things that will sear themselves into your memory. When you requested this world, you were probably thinking more about the geopolitical consequences. What would the great powers do? But the reality is, when you're traveling on foot, your experiences are much more intimate. Good luck. You rise from the scorching earth. You're covered in soot, and you cough uncontrollably. You turn over and cough into the ground, but the earth is so hot it burns your hands. Your clothes feel as though they must be on fire. You throw off your blazer, feeling fire in your body. You roll up your sleeves. Your skin is red and blistered. Your face is painful and hurts to the touch. You're overcome by another coughing fit. You can't get the soot out of your lungs. You wipe the spit off your chin. Your phlegm is black. You're so thirsty. You stand and look around. The world looks like hell. The sky is a murky fog of floating soot. The ground is blackened mud. There are glowing red cracks in the mud, as though you were standing on the magma blood of some giant demon. You crawl your way up the side of a hill, hoping for cleaner air. You almost stumble over a cliff. Below you is a vast sea of glowing magma. Where are you? Did you die? Is this hell? You're so thirsty. You climb back down the hill, but where will you go? You can't see more than 20 feet in front of you. You come to a beach. Black water is lapping the darkened soil. Is this the River Styx? You fall to your knees and reach your hands in. It's bath warm. It's also filled with black soot. You're thirsty, but this water doesn't look clean. You wade into the water. About waist deep, you feel a slight current, but the water is still black. Maybe it is the Styx. There's a light, a small yellow light out in the fog. You see a black shape heading towards you. There's a horn. It's a ship. Help! Over here! You say, then catch yourself. Could that be the boatman Charon come to take you away to the land of death? You shake the thought off. Help! Are you okay? Says the man, putting a blanket over your shoulders. He's wearing a scarf over his nose and mouth, but his eyes reveal horror. His hands shake. Were you in this when it happened? He speaks some language you can't name, yet you understand his words. I don't know. I just woke up. I'm so confused. Well, you're okay now. I'm so thirsty. Of course. Let me get you some water. He uncorks a flask and hands it to you. The water is so sweet and refreshing. Was there anyone else out there with you? Shake your head and take another long draw from the flask. It's unbelievable. Absolutely unspeakable. Terrible. How could this? He trails off, gazes out at the soot-filled sky. What is this place? The man looks down at you, confused by your question. Then his face shows sympathy. You must be shocked out of your wits. Can't believe you survived out here, this close to the impact. I haven't found anyone else this far out. Impact? Did you say impact? Yes. Comet hit Paris. You sit upright. Memories flood back. The Twilight histories. Yes. You booked a split. Ah, I see you understand. You should rest. You must be exhausted. Wait. What is this water we're in? This, my friend, is the Seine. It now flows around the crater. And to think it once flowed past the Louvre and Notre Dame, all of Paris, now just dust. His eyes tear up. Hours pass, the fog dissipates, and you begin to see ruins rising from the buckled ground. Everything leans away from the impact. Stunned people walk about here and there. The captain calls down to them, inviting anyone to join who needs a ride to the hospital tents. It doesn't take long for the small fishing boat to fill with wounded. Their cries are as pitiful as their injuries are horrifying. A man without a face, a mother picking maggots from her child's blackened skin, clothes in tatters, limbs crushed by fallen stone. The captain just shakes his head and sighs heavily at these sights. The small coal-powered fishing boat chugs up to the pier where hospital tents are being set up by soldiers in the fields outside a small shattered village. Nurses and doctors are attending row upon row of injured lying out in the open. How do you feel? The captain says. It's a bloody miracle, you being so close to that impact. I just can't get over it. I feel fine, just a little stunned. He gives you a quick up and down, then nods with approval. You feel up for helping? Yes, of course. I was going to ask what I could do. Well, there are a couple options for you. I know they need all the help they can get here. Oh, like what? Any number of things. Changing dressings, carrying water, putting up new tents. They're desperate for help. Just look at them. Look at all these poor wretches lying out in the open with no one to care for them. You see a nurse washing bandages in the river. She's drenched in blood and her gown is red. She would be pretty in a different setting. She looks up and you meet her eyes. The terror in her eyes hits you like an electric shock. You said there were two options? What's the other option? You could come along with me if you want. I'm going back in for more survivors. It's up to you. What do you think? You've been helping the fishermen collect the wounded for a week. The most extreme cases are dead. The people you rescue now are those with lesser wounds. The great dust cloud has cleared, revealing a vast landscape of devastation. Most eerie is the River Seine. Its geography disturbed by the blast, it now spreads out across the land like a shallow lake. Ruins rising from it like tombstones in a mud-brown flooded cemetery. The expanding waters help you reach further inland, but they also ensure all survivors who are still buried are drowned. It's evening, and the captain docks the boat next to a hill. You need to find coal for the small boat. You follow a road through flattened gardens buried under a thick layer of soot. There are smashed houses, and you rummage through them collecting coal and food. You come to a large, ruined building. Some of its huge, ornate walls remain buttressed against the sky. "What's this?" you say. "I think it may be Versailles." You climb through the ruins. You find one of the great halls, the ceiling half caved in. It looks like a place where elegantly dressed people might once have waltzed the evening away. There are a few peasants huddled in the corner around a cooking fire. One of them has a hand organ and is playing a sad tune. You and the captain join them without saying a word. He pulls out a bottle of champagne he found in one of the cellars and uncorks it. It's passed around from mouth to mouth in silence. The organ stops, and the chirps of some lone cricket fill the night air, an insect's requiem to the death of Paris. The captain rises and is swallowed by the night. Your head is a little dizzy from the liquor being passed around, and you lie down and look up at the stars twinkling through the blasted ceiling. You wonder why the captain is taking so long. You pick yourself up and leave the fire, swaying a little from the drink. You find him in one of the rooms, curled up in a ball, crying. You take a curtain and drape it over him like a blanket. He takes the curtain and pulls it over his head. You leave him to his grief. It's the first time you've seen him cry. "Wake up," the captain says, nudging you with his foot. The morning sky is bright, and it hurts your eyes. Your head feels like it's cracked in places. You're hungover. It doesn't help you were sleeping on stones. "Do we have to get up?" "Yes, you are hungover. Others are injured and need our help." "Okay, you're right," you say, and rise to your feet, holding your head in your hands. "I found coal."
"Where?"
"There's a coal chute. Come." You follow the captain out of the ruins and around the side. There's a grate that's been removed from the ground, and down below you can smell the coal.
"We'll take 2 buckets each. It will be a long walk back to the boat, so don't worry about packing them too full."
You carry the buckets down the road. It doesn't take long before your arms are exhausted. You rest in the grass, which is covered in soot. The captain takes out a sausage and portions it out with a knife.
"I'm sorry for what you saw last night," he says.
"What? Oh no, don't worry about it."
"No, I have to say it. I left because I didn't want anyone to see me."
"Right, I see. I'm sorry if I just didn't know where you were."
He stabs the knife into the ground hard, then stands and turns away. "My wife was in Paris," he says. "She was there to see her family. I was coming down to pick her up, so I saw the comet. It was as bright as the sun. It lit the sky like a fire. The blast almost sank my boat. I came down as fast as I could."
"You've been trying to find her?"
"Yes. It's hopeless, though."
You notice a group of soldiers hiking down the road towards you.
"We'll keep looking," you say. "There are plenty of survivors."
"No, she's certainly gone. I was going to pick her up at the Louvre. She was more cultured than me. I don't know why she was with a common fisherman."
"You're not common. You've saved a lot of lives."
He shakes his head.
"Finding you so close to the impact, it gave me hope."
I I'm sorry for that.
You were right on the lip of the crater.
I know. I must have been walking around for a while. Gone in when I should have gone out.
But the Seine, it goes all around the crater. The crater is an island in the middle of it. How did you get in there?
I really don't know. I assume I walked there before the river trapped me.
He sits down in the sooty grass and leans back on his elbows. He looks dejected.
Yes, that's probably it.
The soldiers approach. They carry large packs and they look tired. You nod at them as they pass. An officer walks up to you.
What are you two doing lying about?
Just bringing coal to my boat, the captain says, motioning to the buckets.
Don't you know there's a war to fight?
War? What war?
The Germans. They've crossed the Ardennes. Come on, get yourselves in line.
We can't. We're looking for survivors.
It looks to me like you're having a picnic. Now get in line.
The captain doesn't move. The officer pulls out his revolver, but points it to the ground.
So, it will be like that, the captain says.
You hike the rest of the day and into the evening, following the banks of the Seine north. You get to know a couple of the soldiers. You're in a reservist unit from Orléans, a city not far from Paris. The soldier next to you is a young man named Jean-Baptiste. He's thin, with wisps of a mustache. You learned his father is a local bank manager in Orléans. He was studying finance in Paris on his father's orders and had to return home for the summer, mercifully avoiding the event. But he had friends who remained in Paris, as well as some family. He tells you the conflicting emotions racing through him are tearing him apart. Sadness at the loss of loved ones, relief at the avoidance of death, excitement at going to war, anger at the Kaiser for attacking France during its time of greatest need, a patriotism he never knew he had. You stop for the evening. You line up and eat a bowl of grub. Then you find a patch of grass and collapse in exhaustion. You're asleep before you can even finish eating. You're nudged awake. It's night, and you can hear crickets.
Who's that?
Shh, it's me, the captain says. Come on, let's go.
Go where?
I'm leaving. I have to keep going. I have to keep looking for my wife. Come with me.
Is gone. The captain curses whoever stole his boat. He grumbles about his livelihood as a fisherman, but mostly he worries about mobility. He's stuck and can't search for his wife. The boat allowed him to troll the Seine, searching through devastated suburbs while checking the many temporary tent hospitals that have popped up along the flooded river. Now he's stuck, immobile. You and the captain walk back to the large structure he thought was Versailles. It's now crawling with soldiers. It seems to have become a gathering place for them. Maybe a command center. Not wanting to be forced into the army again, you sneak back into the surrounding foliage. You follow the riverbank. You come to a suburb. It's mostly flooded, but there are still shattered houses above water. The survivors are digging through the ruins.
You hear a commotion down the street, shouting. You and the captain follow the sounds. The townspeople are pulling children from a cellar. A stunned mother and father follow. There are shouts and cries as the family is surrounded by friends and relatives and neighbors. It's one small spark of joy in a world full of despair. A moment that's quickly extinguished, like a candle being blown out, the endless night enveloping it. The captain turns away. "I can't look," he says. You stay at the town for what feels like a couple weeks, helping them sift through the rubble. A few more survivors are pulled out, but most are bodies, crushed or starved, burnt or suffocated. There are some expeditions out to the flooded houses, but these mostly return empty-handed. Soldiers from the front trickle through the town. They say the French are in retreat. Some of these lost soldiers are searching for their units, but most are just trying to get back home. The war is lost, they say. The German army will soon pass through this way. You and the captain decide it would be best to follow them. You come to a military hospital. Most of the people here are survivors of the event, but these are being quickly displaced by injured soldiers from the front. They arrive by the wagon load. The captain wants to keep going, but then stops. He has to just take one look. Maybe his wife is here. You wander the tents. This is always the grimmest part. The part you hate the most. The smells and cries. The operations performed by exhausted doctors. It's a place of despair. You wish the captain still had his boat so you could escape this place. Maybe you could wait for him down the road.
"Hey, you,"
comes a familiar voice. You turn and see a soldier with a wispy mustache. It's Jean-Baptiste, the young soldier from the unit you escaped from. You bend down to him.
"Are you okay?"
"My legs,"
he says. His eyes are sad. You look down at his blanket. It dips after the knees. "At least you got out," you say. You take his hand. His eyes are so sad.
"All the joy in life is gone," he says. "There is nothing left."
"It's a sad time,
but I'm sure it won't always be that way," you say.
It seems like a pathetic thing to say to someone who has just lost so much.
"I hear the Americans have declared war, and the Russians and Britain, even Italy. The Kaiser is isolated."
Jean-Baptiste closes his eyes.
"What does it matter?" he says. "Nothing matters."
You put his hand back on his chest and rise. You have a flash of fear.
"Where's the rest of your unit?" you say. "Anyone who survived is here," he says. "Okay, thank you. You'll be okay, Jean-Baptiste. Just keep the hope alive."
You crouch as you walk down the rows, as though that would help you hide yourself. You've heard of deserters being executed without trial. You hear a great cry. It's the captain's voice from the next tent over. Part of you wants to check on him, but the larger part is afraid. You hear his voice again, another cry. This one is longer, a kind of wailing. Then you hear a woman's scream. Your curiosity overrides your fear. You sneak over to the tent and open the flap a crack. You see the captain holding a nurse in a tight embrace. Both are weeping, tears rolling down their cheeks that wet their shoulders. Is it? Is it really? Everyone in the room that can is sitting up, watching. The captain pushes the nurse to arm's length.
Let me look at you. Is it really you? Are you really alive?
Yes, it's me. Is it really you?
It's me, yes.
My love,
he says. The two kiss, then hug, then kiss again. A couple of wounded soldiers clap. You see a man stand up. He's missing an arm, and a bloody bandage covers one eye. He holds a revolver. You recognize this man, and your heart sinks. It's the officer who pressed you into the army. The officer you and the captain escaped from.
Deserter!
He yells. It's almost a snarl. The captain looks at him. His face is still beaming with joy.
Wipe that look off your face, deserter!
The blood drains from the officer's face. He raises his revolver. It looks awkward in his left hand.
I, please, don't!
The captain stammers. The revolver barks. The nurse bucks out of the captain's arms and rolls to the ground. The captain looks down at her crumpled body in disbelief. He collapses on top of her.
No,
he says.
No, why? No!
You look over at the officer. He drops the gun to the ground, shaking his head.
I didn't mean to,
he says. You close the tent flap and walk away. It becomes just another scene of senseless misery in a world crying with pain. Misery is unlocked by the chaos of misery itself, a compounding and ever-expanding shockwave of suffering spreading across the globe, its rippling aftershocks normalizing despair while shattering the ethical web of civilization. What will become of this world? Will it heal? Will it overcome its suffering and lay a new foundation of order? Or will it devour itself? You look across the flooded river valley. You see the hazy visage of the impact crater, now a desolate island on the horizon. It is a smoldering monument to chaos and its army, despair. What you just heard was The Paris Event. It was produced by myself, Jordan Harbour, with the initial idea being suggested by our patron, Ryan Lazarus. And of course, we have to thank all our patrons who contributed their ideas and voted along the way. We're going to do another story, this next one a bit shorter. Because The Paris Event was quite dark, I think the next one should be a little lighter in mood, don't you think? I put it out to our patrons to come up with ideas using the word discovery for inspiration. You too can offer your idea, and all you have to do is become a supporting member of the show through Patreon. Here are a few of the ideas our patrons have come up with so far, just to show you the range. Jonathan offered the idea that you are on a mining mission in a distant solar system. You uncover the remains of a civilization that looks almost human. Sounds like something from the Twilight Zone. That would be a fun one. Brian Anderson wants to see trade between a much larger Greek empire lead to Hellenistic cities rising from the jungles of Peru. A great culture mashup. These ones are fun. Catrock 31 came up with the idea of visiting a civilization of people without eyes. Their architecture is designed based on the way sound is diffused. You can imagine the sound engineers over at Radiolab having a field day with this one. There are a handful of other ideas in the thread. I count 13 at the moment. We'll run this for a few more days before we put it to a vote. What you need to do in order to add your idea is head on over to the website at twilighthistories.com and click through to our Patreon page. Sign up and add your idea to the thread called Discovery. It should be near the top. Once you've added your idea, have a browse through all the shows you just unlocked.
I highly recommend you start with Ice Age Misery, which is one of my earliest shows, and the first show that uses the regular format you've come to know and love. Again, go to twilighthistories.com and click through to Patreon. I'm Jordan Harbour. Until next time, take care.